Welcome to the Podcast Sessions with Retendo Nyamwuda, where we chat all things podcasting. On today's episode, we chat to the creator and host of True Crime South Africa, Nicole Engelbracht. Before we dive into today's episode, don't forget that you can download your free copy of the Podcast Sessions digital magazine at www.thepodsessions.com. So, Nicole, I just want to jump straight into things. It's been absolutely fascinating and really interesting to see the rise of true crime podcasts, not just in South Africa, but across the entire world. We've got the likes of Serial, Criminal, Africa Uncensored, My Favorite Murder, In the Dark, and of course, your podcast, True Crime SA. In your opinion, what is playing a role in the rise of true crime podcasts?
I think, you know, true crime as a genre has been popular for longer than we'd like to admit. I think, I mean, that goes back to like the 1920s. But podcasts in particular, I think what has boosted the rise of that is accessibility, and accessibility for listeners as well as creators. For listeners, it's an easy place to get their so-called true crime fix. And for creators, it's an easy place for them to indulge their own true crime interest and add their opinions to the mix if that's what their podcast is about. So I think that's a lot of, you know, and it's always interesting if you look at different cases, there's so many different takes. And I think that's what you see coming up with different true crime podcasts is almost every podcaster or YouTuber is going to have a different take on the case if they do include their own opinion. So I think that's a lot behind what's driving it.
And what role do you see podcasts, true crime podcasts, playing within this journalism sphere? Because it's also very interesting. You're speaking about the opinions that people have, the different angles people are tackling. You would almost assume that journalists, you know, from an objective perspective would be able to tackle these. But true crime podcasts, and podcasters in a sense are also lending their voice almost from like a citizen journalism perspective. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, look, it's a powerful thing. It's a powerful thing, but it's also a huge responsibility. And my concern in that is that not everyone may be creating with the same idea in mind. So, you know, how I would like to see us harness this tool and this platform for crime in general is in an ethical manner, and in a way that actually educates and helps move cases forward and doesn't fall into that trap of sensationalizing cases and, you know, almost this, for want of a better phrase, crime porn type of idea where it's just something people are getting and a form of entertainment where people are, you know, just getting their fix. I'd really like it to be used, and for me that's ideal, is, you know, in an ethical way where even if it is an unqualified person such as myself, I'm not a journalist or, you know, any qualification in a criminological field, where we're using it to benefit victims first and foremost, and to educate and really drive things forward in a positive way, and not just use it as another form of entertainment.
And that's very interesting what you're saying about the entertainment aspect of it, the romanticizing aspect of it, because at the end of the day, these are real people with real stories. We have the victims behind a lot of these true crime stories. You've also, you know, spoken about people who have been wrongfully kind of like judged or sentenced as well. So there is a sensitivity to that. As someone like yourself who's also been in this kind of podcasting space, what kind of advice would you want to give to people who are entering the true crime podcast space, and what are the things they should caution when going through the production process?
So, you know, particularly in South Africa, I think we're in an interesting time in the true crime space in all sort of platforms at the moment, where creators who are entering into this are doing so in this sort of teething period where we can all be pioneers in the genre in this country. We can learn things from how other countries, such as the US and the UK and maybe even Australia, how they have perhaps made mistakes and had to correct themselves along the way. We can do it right the first time. You know, so ideally, I'd like to advise anyone wanting to create in this field to really ask yourself why you're doing it. You know, if it's because you think it's cool to be a true crime podcaster or a true crime YouTuber, and that's some sort of like flex you want to work, that is not going to take you very far. You know, really drill down into your values and your reasons for wanting to do it. And it doesn't always have to be that serious, but you have to have, as with anything in life, I think you have to have a set of ethics that you work to that you always come back to. Otherwise, when things like, you know, and this is another part of my advice, when listeners start adding their opinions and you start getting negative and positive feedback on social media and the different platforms, that can really confuse a creator who didn't start out with a really rigid framework about this is who I am as a creator, this is what my intentions are. And anything outside of that is either something I can consider depending on the source or it's noise. Mm-hmm. You know, so really, I think thinking deeply about what you're doing before getting into it, because I think more so than any other genre of podcasting, this one comes with a lot of responsibility that people don't really realize until they're 5 or 6 episodes into it and they're suddenly having sleepless nights.
No, certainly. And you know, you're speaking quite avidly about like listeners and getting some, you know, insights and their opinions. I want to actually just look at some of the statistics in terms of who actually is listening to true crime podcasts, because I won't lie. Like you mentioned at the beginning, true crime podcasts or documentaries or content has been happening for such a long time. And I remember growing up, you know, going into the lounge and here we are watching these American true crime documentaries or reenactments of some of the true crime stories. And some of them sit with you when you end up going like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to sleep at night. And others just intrigue you and you keep coming back because there's almost that addictive tendency. I need to know what happens next in a sense, you know, or how does the story end? But, you know, according to research that I came across, it's the 2022 research by Pew Research Center in the USA. They say that women actually listen to more true crime podcasts than men. It was 61% of women who listened in comparison to 43% of men. And then there was also high listenership of the youth. So people between the ages of 18 and 29 listening to podcasts. What are your thoughts on those kind of demographics, women and then the youth? Why is this a genre that is so appealing to them?
I think that, you know, more so now than in previous generations, crime and, you know, terrible things happening is a lot bigger part of growing up than it used to be. You know, whether it's because it's happening more, possibly, whether it's because it's more publicized, also possibly. You know, so I think that accounts for the youth aspect of it. I will say that my podcast is a slightly older listenership, which may have something to do with, you know, it being mainly South African. So my listeners are more 30 and upwards, although I do have a younger following as well. And then in terms of gender, you know, it's always difficult to say because, again, my podcast analytics show there's a, it's not that much of a big gap. You know, I mean, mine will be like 60-40. But when it comes to interacting in public platforms about true crime cases, that is almost solely female. So that's one of the interesting things that I've picked up about that is certainly women do seem to have a greater interest in true crime. Perhaps that is because some of the most heinous crimes are perpetrated against women. That could be one side of it. The other side of it, I think, is with women being generally more emotional beings, there's a lot of the psychological element that we like to understand. Whereas men, again, in general, are more happy to say, oh, well, there's just something wrong with that person and I don't really mind what it is because it doesn't affect me, you know. But I did find that interaction very interesting in terms of how my listenership is pretty even, although more skewed to female, but interaction is almost solely female. Like only females feel comfortable talking about their true crime obsession. So I found that quite interesting.
Certainly, especially, I mean, I even know among some of my friends, some of the conversations we have are sometimes around some episodes. And it's, again, it's those perspectives and also almost in a way, and I don't know if this is in a big way, it's almost that protective mechanism. You're thinking and you're walking down the road and you know that, especially as a female, okay, cool, I need to be quite observant of the space that I'm in. I need to, you know, maybe, you know, walk with a hastened step or keep things. We naturally, just in this day and age where it is incredibly dangerous to be a female in many countries, you spoke about the stats in South Africa, really, really high stats. These almost true crime podcast documentaries shed light on the realities of what's happening to many people as well.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah, 100%. And, you know, what's really interesting is the data shows that the predominant victims of murder are male. You know, more men are murdered than females are. But the most vicious crimes that involve more than gun violence, etc., are those victims are predominantly female. So yeah, absolutely. I think it's a, you know, what can we learn from this to avoid becoming a victim? And I think also in there is a, perhaps we need to realize that the victims were also just like us, that there was really nothing that separated us from them, often just knowing the wrong person at the wrong time.
Yeah, that's so true. And Nicole, for you, I was very interested to find out that, you know, you started off in corporate, you know, almost 2 decades ago, because listening to your podcast and even engaging with your content in general, you'd assume, you know, journalism, you know, has been a true crime investigators there, you know, watch all these TV shows and you are scripting for the shows. But it's interesting that you started off in corporate and then came into the podcast scene. Tell me a little bit about your journey and why the shift.
Yeah. So, I mean, firstly, I think hopefully that gives more people hope that, you know, I made that shift when I was almost 40 years old. So hopefully that gives more people, you know, hope that there is time for a shift much later than you think in life. And it was a total, a huge shift. I mean, I was working in corporate management, but, you know, it really, one of the reasons that I decided to move into more of a creative entrepreneurship, as I called it, because I didn't feel like the corporate space was really helping me to achieve anything. It may have been a early midlife crisis or whatever it was, but, you know, it was just chasing numbers month after month. And for many people, that is satisfying. And for me at the time, it wasn't. So, you know, when I decided to make the shift, the podcast was actually going to be a very small part of what I was going to do. I understood that I needed to have multiple streams of income. So it was going to be, I was a hobby writer for many years before that. I was going to try and branch into some freelance writing, you know, blog management, that sort of thing. And then, yeah, the podcast just really exploded and took over everything. And now literally everything in my life is true crime related.
And so talk to me a little bit about some of your processes, because, you know, listening to your podcast, it is quite a straightforward podcast. You know what you're going to get. Your format is pretty simple. It's pretty consistent. It's your voice leading us through these stories, through your narration. But on the outside, especially like your podcast being one of the top podcasts in South Africa and definitely true crime podcasts on the continent and, you know, probably internationally, is For me, it feels like there's an entire production team behind it. But the truth is, it's just you. So what exactly does it take for one person to put together this kind of production?
Yeah, it probably shouldn't still be just me, but it is. You know, I may take on some assistance in the future. I think I am at the point in the podcast journey where I need to let go of a few things. But it's been extremely difficult. You know, it really takes, I mean, I do all the research, all the writing, all the recording, all the editing, you know, all of that myself. It has been extremely taxing and continues to be so. And really more the podcast becomes popular and gets sponsors every week, that sort of ties me to having to release an episode every single week. You know, so I've often got, in terms of research, lots of cases on the boil. I'll have an interview scheduled for this week that I'm only going to be releasing in a few weeks on the podcast, you know, and it has, unfortunately, I got myself into, and I take full responsibility for this, I got myself into this thing of releasing every week, this almost, I don't want to say trap, because it's a lovely trap to have, but people now expect it. Sponsors have paid for spots on the episode, so it has to be released. And I don't have any backup episodes, so I'm literally producing week to week, you know, while other, you know, doing other things, writing books, you know, and other different things that I'm blessed to be able to do now. So yeah, it's rough. And I think that, you know, going back to your question about advice to creators is it is a lot of work. And if you can afford to in the beginning, because I mean, let's face it, for a lot of us, it comes down to what resources you've got when you start a podcast. And I did not have the resources to pay someone to edit my podcast. So I had to learn all of these things myself. It was either that or not have a podcast. You know, so, but I think that that is a good place to start because you understand it's like running a company. You really should know how to do all of the roles in that company. And I think it's the same with the podcast. Once you can get to the point where you can release some of those roles, great. And I think that will hopefully come in the near future for me. But yeah, it's a ton of work, absolutely. But I really wouldn't be doing anything else.
And your podcast episodes are plus minus about an hour or so. That's quite a bit of scripting. That's quite a bit of research. That's quite a bit of sources and also just finding the right sources. How do you go about that? Because, you know, as mentioned earlier, there is quite a heavy journalistic element to it. There is an element of needing to tell the truth. And, you know, sometimes even journalists get it wrong. Sometimes they get it right. How much time goes into, especially for you, that research sources process?
It really depends on the case, you know, the complexity of the case, whether the case is solved or unsolved. Research alone can take me a good week, although I'm doing lots of different cases at once, you know, and really my research and sourcing process has changed over time as I've learned myself what sources can be trusted and which can't. You know, so you mentioned that sometimes journalists don't always get it right. And one of the things I've learned through the years is any articles released in sort of the first 24 to 48 hours of a crime, take them with a giant truckload of salt, because it's not that the journalists are out to tell lies. They are working on information that is often not always, there isn't a base of fact for it yet. You know, so I really, my gold standard is court documents, because then I know that that's gone through the NPA, it's gone through prosecution, it's gone through defense, it's gone through a judge. So the odds that the facts in those documents are correct are as close as you're going to get it.
Okay. And talk to me a little bit about the business side of your podcast journey, because You're probably one person who I feel, especially as an independent podcaster who is doing everything by herself, you've seemed to have really nailed down quite a winning formula. So you've got, on the one hand, you've got the Patreon, sponsorship side from listeners. And it's lovely how you just like acknowledge them at the start of your podcast as well. And then you've got some sponsorships that come through. As you mentioned, if you have a weekly sponsor, you have to, put something out there. Then you've partnered with the likes of Jacaranda to, create the Afrikaans version of your podcast. So there's this almost like multiple streams of income kind of element and aspect to it. How did you approach the business side? What were your thoughts on the business side? Was this something you always, when you started, you thought to yourself, I need to be able to sustain this and make money from this venture?
So to be honest with you, the monetization of the podcast was one of the most difficult things for me to come to terms with in the beginning. And that's very simply because of the nature of the content. I had to come to terms with personally monetizing stories that are essentially telling the most difficult periods of time in people's lives. I understood that many creators across the world make money off the genre, but for me personally, that was a difficult thing. And as such, I did not have a plan in place as to how or when I was going to monetize, or even if I was going to monetize, because to be honest with you, in the beginning, I thought I'd get about five listeners and that would be it. So it would be like an interesting hobby. So the growth sort of took me by surprise. And as I went along step by step, I had to slowly come to terms with the fact that people want this content. But more importantly, this content is doing good. The cold cases I cover, leads were coming in, cases were being reopened on old missing persons cases. Families were saying that they found it beneficial to them to hear their stories told. So that I think is one of the things that I said, okay, well, if I am now actually able to do something good in the real world and I'm not just giving people some entertainment while they wash their dishes, then maybe personally I can come to terms with monetizing. Started the Patreon really not being able to offer anything more. And I said that to my Patreons. I can't give you an extra episode, but if you'd like to be part of building this podcast, great. Thank you very much. I'll give you a shout out on the podcast. And the Patreon really did really well on that basis. And then eventually, I did start giving some exclusive content every month. And then really from a brand perspective on the sponsorships, I've been extremely lucky because I've never had to contend with how to market this as a sales platform because I've never approached a brand. All of the brands that are advertised on the podcast have approached me. Which is, I mean, I feel like I talk glibly about this, but this entire thing happening and how it's come together has been just incredible. And I know it's not how it's ever going to happen for everyone. And obviously very grateful that it did. But I think that one of the things that made that happen was me starting with that solid base of this is what I want to achieve, and brands who also had that value center saying, this is a platform we want to be a part of. So that's sort of how the monetization and then all these additional partnerships started happening.
And speaking of partnerships, just coming back to the Jacaranda FM, aspect of it where they've translated, where you translated the podcast into a few episodes into Afrikaans. What role do you believe that language plays in some of these true crime podcasts, especially in South Africa?
So the Jacaranda experience was really eye-opening for me. It was great, firstly, obviously working with the team and that they committed to doing that. And the Afrikaans audience responded to it phenomenally. It became, one of the most popular and successful new podcasts at the time. But what that's done for me is made me want to do more, because I do believe that we need to start producing this content in as many of our official languages as we can, or at the very least in the most widely spoken ones. Because many of these, the demographic in South Africa is that people who are English speaking of birth are not the biggest number, largest number of victims. So really we should be, the people who these stories belong to should be able to access this content in their mother tongue. And whether, and I do believe that that is going to be something that is beneficial content to every South African. Obviously not everyone's going to have an interest in true crime. And there's also an element of understanding that people from different backgrounds will interact with the content differently. But I think from an educational perspective, True Crime South Africa specifically, I would love to have, at least some of the episodes I do on consent and, the definition of rape and sentencing and how the court system works. I would love to have some of those translated into more of our official languages, so it really has a wider spread, because I think it's so important.
No, most definitely. I think that is incredibly key, and would also love to see that, come into fruition and come into being. I want to almost switch gears into, something that is really important, which is the mental health aspects of this. We spoke a little bit earlier about how, sometimes watching this can have an impact on your mental health, on your psyche. But for you, as the person researching, being the voice behind a lot of these true crime stories, how has this played on your mental health, or how has this impacted your mental health? And yeah, just in essence, how has this impacted your mental health?
So this is it's obviously a question I get asked quite often, because I think it's something that interests a lot of people. And for a long time, I wasn't sure why I was giving the answer that I do. But I've realized now that it does impact me, but it doesn't impact me the same way it would impact other people. So it doesn't have a negative a long-lasting negative impact on me. And I think the reason for that is because I am a naturally emotionally resilient person. So that was just a stroke of luck, perhaps. Because what I've noticed with some of the creators that are in the true crime space that I mentor is, whether it's an age thing or just a personality thing, if that emotional resilience is not in place and you're not able to sort of compartmentalize the two, your life and this case that you're researching, those can often become very muddled in a person's head, and that becomes, emotionally exhausting to a person. So that's really what I do, is I compartmentalize, which is something that's I've come to realize people in the field of law enforcement, forensic pathologists, they all do this naturally. They put the work that they're doing and the reason they're doing it in one mental box, and then everything that they might feel personally about that subject in another box. And sometimes those boxes don't ever meet, and sometimes they do. But I think what's helped me to not be negatively impacted by this work is focusing really on the good that it can do. I know that if I allow myself to become too horrified about a specific case, I'm not going to get that episode done, and that victim's voice is not going to be heard. With that said, there are times when I'll look at a specific case and I'll just realize this is not the time for me to be looking at this case. It's too much for me right now. I'll put it one side and then I'll come back to it at another time. But I think it's that awareness of yourself and not pushing yourself to cover something that's not going to be good for you personally at that time.
And out of the podcasts that you've produced, especially with True Crime SA, is there any one particular episode that stands out for you for any particular reason, whether it was within the process or the actual story?
I think mostly for me it's the unsolved cases, because in those cases I often get the opportunity to interact with the victims' families. And that brings a totally different understanding to a case than reading a book or reading a court document. No matter how horrific assault case is, actually talking to a human being whose loved one is either missing or was murdered and their case is unsolved, it just strikes you completely differently. So specifically, I think the first interview that I did with the parents of a victim who was 15-year-old Connor Isaacs, who was killed in here in the Western Cape, I think that was one of the ones that stands out for me because it introduced me to the idea that obviously I knew that this was real, but there's a way, you separate yourself from it. But when you're faced with it and the person is sitting in front of you, it takes it to a totally different level. So I think specifically that case, but then also a lot of the missing person cases, where I've stayed in contact with the families and that sort of thing.
And I mean, definitely, even the listening to your podcast, no doubt, does take, what you mentioned earlier, that emotional resilience, to be able to unpack, uncover, research around this. Talk to me a little bit about some of the feedback that you've gotten from True Crime SA, from listeners, from families, and just from the general public in general.
It's sometimes almost overwhelming, but it really has just been incredible, the support that I've got. Sometimes it's difficult to understand how I'm sort of on the sort of microscopic level, and it's difficult for me to understand how it can have such a deep impact in some people's lives, and it really does. It's everything from people just telling me that it helps keep them company on the long drive. The other day a lady told me she created this beautiful, she took a photograph of this beautiful mosaic she'd installed at a wine farm, and she said she'd listened to like 10 episodes of True Crime South Africa while she was making it. Those are the sort of lighter things. And then I get a lot of feedback from people, especially when I talk about mental health issues with perpetrators and how their families struggled to try and get them help. I get a lot of people reaching out to me about that because they feel validated that someone is seeing their plight. Rape victims, sadly, I am sometimes overwhelmed by the number of rape victims that reach out to me and say, this happened to me as well. They don't necessarily want to talk about it on the podcast, but that gives them something to reach out to me and say, it felt validating that you spoke about that, and whatever it may be. I mean, some people hear about marital rape, for instance, for the first time on my podcast. They didn't know it was a crime for a man to rape his wife. So that type of feedback for me is just incredibly motivating, because that's exactly what I want to be hearing. It's all lovely when people say, oh, you got such a nice voice, and I fall asleep to your voice at night, and all of these things, but those really valuable bits are the people who say, I was listening and it really gave me validation about my experience, or I learned something, especially. And I mean, let's be honest and not put creators in any illusion. There's negative feedback too. I occasionally get the families of perpetrators reaching out to me and saying, can't you just leave it be? Why do you have to bring this up again? I'll have some people who don't like the way I podcast. Thankfully for them, there are millions of other true crime podcasts to listen to. it's always going to be a mixed bag. And whenever you put yourself out there with anything you create, that's an understanding you've got to come to before you do it, is that you're not always going to be everyone's cup of tea. But again, as long as you are doing that thing you set out to do in the beginning, it's easier to cope with the bad stuff and celebrate the good stuff, I think.
Second last question. I have to definitely ask about your equipment and what you use for anything to do with pre-production, actual production, and post-production. What mics do you use? What applications do you use to create your amazing podcast?
So really, really simple. I'm using very much the similar equipment to what I did when I started. A Samson microphone that plugs directly into my laptop. I use Audacity as my recording and editing platform because that's free to download and pretty easy if you use YouTube to teach yourself. If I could teach myself it, then anyone can. And then, quality is super important. So, I always knew that I wanted my podcast to sound as professional as possible, but maybe didn't have a huge amount of resources. So really I built my own, it's almost, a recording box, I guess you would call it, which is a foam lined little cubicle that sits on my desk. My microphone goes in there and that just cancels out that echo, which can be so indicative of when you listen to a lot of podcasts, that can be very distracting. So really, really simple. And then just a pop filter. Maybe in the next few months I'll be investing in some more equipment. If I plan to do some traveling with interviews and things like that. But yeah, I think that's one of the things I love about podcasting is that you really can start with really simple equipment and create a really good podcast.
And finally, Nicole, how can people reach you? Please let us know any information, websites, social media, podcast. How can people get hold of you?
Sure, thank you. So I do have a website for True Crime South Africa. So that's truecrimesouthafrica.com. On there, you'll find all our social links. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And then in terms of listening, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, pretty much anywhere anyone is listening to their podcasts.
And that's a wrap on today's episode. Don't forget that you can download the latest issue of the Podcast Sessions digital magazine, Give Her Her Flowers, at www.thepodsessions.com.